Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of the coaching profession with cutting-edge practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Coaching Uncaged brings you pioneering thinking to enrich the art and science of coaching in all its forms. And now, introducing your host, Robert Stevenson.
Welcome to today's podcast. I am joined by Jenny Garrett, who is an author, a speaker, a leadership trainer, as well as a coach and the founder of the first BAME Coaching Executive Coaches Directory. Welcome, Jenny, to our podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here. Sounds like a lot when you say it like that.
Well, when I was sort of thinking about our conversation, I was looking at some of the work that you've done, and I was kind of going, wow, how do you do all of what you do? Because it feels like you're in all of the spaces. I remember seeing you on the news talking about coaching and about Black Lives Matter. And I was just like, it feels like you're everywhere. So I guess there's a thing here about, you know, how do you have the energy to do all of that work?
Well, I think you probably know the answer to this, because I'm sure it's the same answer that you would have, which is you follow the thing that you're really passionate about and you know why you're doing the work you do. And for me, it has to be, anything I do has to be really aligned with what are the important things for me. And inclusion and equality are at the heart of what I'm about, and also empowerment. So when people ask me to do anything, I kind of tap into that. Is it really connected with that thing that I care about? And if it is, somehow I find the energy around it, if it is. But also the truth is I have help. I don't do everything myself. I have collaborators. I have associates who work with me. I have a marketer and an administrator. So I don't do everything on my own, and it's not physically possible. And it's something that I've had to really learn to do. I'm a pretty independent person, but getting help was really necessary.
I think that's something that a lot of coaches find a struggle, and perhaps a lot of maybe entrepreneurs and sort of solopreneurs, that idea of how do we get the help and the support that we need so we can continue to shine doing the thing that we do and not get sort of bogged down in those kind of the nitty-gritty bits that have to get done.
Yeah, and I think you have to kiss quite a few frogs to find your prince of help, you know, your best helper, because I definitely had used many services, from virtual assistants to I've had interns, I've had employees, I've had consultants. So I've had many different types of help, and some have been really great for a time and then it hasn't been so good, and some haven't really worked for me. And I really say, just because one person doesn't work for you doesn't mean that you're not ready for help or that kind of support. It might just not have been the right fit. And each time it helps you hone what you really want. But the other thing is, for someone to help you, you need to get your systems in order. So it's a great process anyway, because you think, well, if I'm going to hand that to someone else, I need to sort it out first. And that process means that you have better systems for yourself, whether or not they work out.
Yeah, I really hear that idea of, you know, sorting your systems out so you can hand them over. Whenever I've gone through a process of handing something over, I've gone, oh, I have to work this all out, because you're kind of doing it all in your head and it's on bits of paper all over the place. And I really love that idea as well of, you know, trying people out and seeing what works for you, because it doesn't always work first time. And there are lots of sort of edges that we need to smooth out as we bring people in to work with us, and finding that right person, I think, is a real key cornerstone in kind of expanding and growing.
Yeah, and I think the work we do, coaching, sort of the world of personal development or professional development, it's a certain kind of work. We're not shifting widgets, you know, and so you do need someone who really gets it. And I think someone who believes as much as you do in your vision and the work that you're trying to do. So I think that buying into it and really getting it is important, and not everyone does. So I think making sure they do, and making sure you've got that clarity of purpose that you can pass on to them as well.
Yeah, and I guess this, you know, part of this will feed into the retreats that you do, that idea of vision and purpose and getting really clear. I was seeing online that you run retreats. I think it's mainly with women.
Yeah.
And sort of that getting clear about what it is you want to do and moving yourself forward.
Yes. I've got a confession to make to you, Robert. You know, everything I develop is what I want for myself. So the retreats, really, I thought it did come from my group, but I thought I want a retreat. And I get as much from the retreats as the participants who attend, because, as you said, I live a busy life. And just those moments, those time, a weekend out, is just so replenishing, you know, to fill your cup, to feel ready to go again. So the retreats are for the people who attend, but they're also just as much for me. I love them, and I gain so much from them.
And I think that's so important to sort of go, you know, what do I want? What do I need? Mm. How can I create something that feeds me, but also feeds my tribe, my group, my community? Yeah. I think that's such an interesting way to live one's life and one's work as well. It kind of brings it together. So it's you're not doing work and relaxation. You're going, how can I fuse these things in a way that works to create a real harmony around that work-life balance?
Yeah, and as a busy person, or an entrepreneur, or a coach, a freelance coach, however you want to describe yourself, giving yourself permission to take time out can be really hard, to turn clients away or just, you know, really keep that moment for yourself. But by building it in the way I've done with the retreats, I know there's at least 3 times a year that I'm saying, okay, I'm switching off. I'm role modeling switching off. I'm telling the participants on the retreat to switch off, and we're together doing something that helps us all. So yeah, I've sort of built in, and I've done that many times in my life, built in ways in which I can take a break. So whether that's at the beginning of the year, booking out holiday, whether that's saying to people, I only do 2 evenings a week when it comes to delivering talks, I do build things in for myself, so that I don't get into that point of burnout or overwhelm.
Mm. And is that something that's come over time for you, or have you always been good at doing that? Because I'm just aware that often people sort of will look at you or people like you and go that you've just kind of been there since day one, and this is how you've always done it, and you've had that level of success from the beginning, and not sort of notice that there's a road or a journey that one might go on to get there.
Yeah, there's absolutely a road and a journey, and definitely I'm completely still a work in progress. So I'm not a perfect person in any sense of that. But what I'd say, yes, definitely I've built it in, and really I think I have a tendency to be a workaholic. It could be really easy for work to take over my whole life. So I think particularly when I started my own business, I realized, I think after the first year, that I'm just going to work and work and work unless something forces me or I force myself to take a break. And I had people around me saying, well, it's either feast or famine. If there's feast, you've just got to keep working. And I thought, I can't keep working like this because it's not going to be good for me. So I started, and I guess lucky, or however you want to talk about, however you want to think about it, I had a young daughter at the time. And so it was school holidays. Okay, I'm going to take August off. Okay, I'm going to take a month off in December. And I started just building those things in, rather than trying to maybe work with the baby, you know, coming in and those sorts of things, just saying, actually, no, I'm giving myself permission to have those times off. And actually, I know I'll feel better as a result. So it really helped me to have a young child who needed me to give myself permission. But I also remember another point when I was feeling overwhelmed. I think it was after I wrote my book and everyone wanted me to come and talk about my book. And I'm a person who does need home time and sleep and just chilling out time in the evenings. And I thought, gosh, I could be out every single night. And I remember my coach at the time just saying to me, what do you want? You know, how do you want to live? What are the rules you want to live by in your life? And I remember I said, well, two nights max will be more than enough for me. And she said, well, that's it. That's your rule. Let people know what your rule is. And it was just as simple as that to start saying to people, oh, I can't do that. Unfortunately, I do two nights and I've got two nights already that week. And no one argues with you. You know, so sometimes we just need to give ourselves permission.
Yeah, I so agree with that, giving ourselves permission and deciding how do we want to live our lives and then crafting that out. I know you sort of, my background is in sort of theatre. I remember being a freelancer and it's like if work was offered, you just kind of took everything because you had this idea that if you didn't take it, it would vanish and then it would be famine and what do you do then? But it is important to decide, well, do I want to be working all the time and what's that going to mean for me? So how do I need to manage myself? And sometimes it's working hard for a long time to reach a goal or a stage where you go, right, at that point, I know I'm going to take some time off because that project will be complete.
Yeah, I think it's that. And I also think there's a couple of things in there, which is, you know, we are living in an awful time of uncertainty right now. There's huge uncertainty. But I also think anyone who's been working, running their own business or a freelance coach has been living with uncertainty for quite some time. And you kind of get to a point where it's, I'm going to trust this uncertainty. So I remember looking at my diary and thinking, I can see 3 months ahead and then I see emptiness. Can I really take holidays? And then thinking, I have to trust that more will come. I just have to trust that more will come because if I never take a break, then when the more does come, I won't be able to do it very well anyway. And there's a point at which you do, of course, you do have to work hard. I'm not saying you don't work hard and you don't put a lot into it, but there's a point at which you have to trust a bit that actually more will come and taking a few days off or a week or whatever it is will not, you know, it won't be the end of the world. It won't stop everything. It won't be the barrier that stops any more work coming along. And I think that does come with time and also experience. But I think there's a point at which you do need to just say, okay, I'm going to trust myself. And this uncertainty that I'm living with is, you know, is everywhere. And people who are employed, there's still uncertainty. They might think they're very secure, but actually, we just don't know what tomorrow brings for any of us.
And as you're talking about that idea of more will come, I sort of think about how, you know, what are the things that one puts in place to enable that more to come? Because it's not just about going, I'm going to go on holiday and that's it. There is, I'm sure there are sort of stages or steps that you go through to go, right, if I'm going to take this time off, what do I need to do to make sure I'm okay when I come back from that time off?
Yeah, I think there's many different stages that my business has gone through. And if I think at the beginning, for me, it was just about building relationships. So it was about talking to people and helping where I can and helping even if people couldn't pay me, actually. So it was, I'm happy to have a half an hour conversation and see if I can support you. And maybe right now is a really tough time for you, but maybe you'll come back to me in the future. So there was a sense of giving and learning through giving because I love coaching and talking to people taught me something. Talking to people always teaches me something. So I was always learning from other people, but also building relationships. So giving, helping, supporting, but also sharing my thinking. And I think probably if we're sort of going diluting or whatever, concentrating into that, what's the key? I think the thought leadership bit, actually sharing some of your thinking, sharing how you think about things and what you think about things is quite important. It differentiates you. Even if maybe you're saying something similar to what someone else has said, it's the way you say it, from your experience, all of that sort of thing really does feed into, I think, helping people to get to know you and what you're about. So I think quite early on, I started sharing my thinking and sharing my feelings. It wasn't just thoughts, it was feelings too. And I think that enabled people to connect in with me. And I've continued to do that. I don't always have the amount of time I would like to be able to share, because I've got so many ideas of things I'd like to write and talk about. But I get some of my thoughts out there into the world. And I think that consistency of message, it's not that you're saying exactly the same thing, but there's, I'm sure my consistency of voice is there. And I think people then go back to the wealth of information you have. It sits on its own, whether I'm physically there or not, whether I'm on holiday or not, you can tap into that. And I think that then leads people to remember you, to come back to you, to think of you in different situations. So yeah, the thoughts, getting your thoughts out there, whether that's written, whether that's YouTube, whether that's a podcast, showing your voice, your story, your thoughts and your feelings.
Yeah, I really sort of resonate with that idea of, you know, sharing what's true for you out into the world, because what's true for you is yours and nobody can take that away from you or sort of copy that. And then having the passion and desire to turn that into articles, into books, which you have done, and using that also to give talks, I think that's a real facet to the sort of the coach's toolkit and sort of building your business toolkit. That idea of, I've got an idea, I'm going to share it, and how else can I share it, and who else can I talk to, and who's going to invite me into their space and onto their stage.
Yeah, and I want to say that it, on paper, it probably looks like a very considered journey, but it's pretty accidental journey, really, the whole journey. So I started off working in a business school. I was responsible for their marketing. A colleague who's now a really good friend came into my office and just said, where next? Where are you going to go with your career? And I remember thinking, I'm doing marketing. I love marketing. And she was saying, no, you could go, you could train people in marketing. And at the time, I didn't want to do that. I was a very nervous public speaker. And then she suggested, you could do some coaching. You actually support colleagues really well. They come away motivated with action. And I ended up on this coaching program that was absolutely transformational for me. It was never a thought in my mind that I would be a coach, and never a thought in my mind when I became a coach that I would start providing leadership development, and never a thought in my mind when I provided leadership development that I was going to write a book. And even when I wrote my book, I really didn't realize it was going to become such a big thing in terms of my business or propel me into the media. So these have been, in ways, doors that have opened for me that I have walked through. Not necessarily a really considered path, as some people I know will have a real plan of, actually, I'm going to do that, and year two I'm going to write a book, and year three I'm going to be on TV. I didn't have any of that. But what I did have was, when opportunities presented themselves, or when ideas came into my mind, I did go for them. I didn't do that thing where we talk ourselves out of it and say, well, I actually, that was a good idea, but that's not the sort of thing I do. I actually went for it. And I think that's, you know, probably the difference between my career and some others, the fact that even when I wasn't sure, I was willing to go for it and fail at it rather than not try.
That's so great, that idea of you just kind of going, right, there's a door, it's open, I'm going to step through and see what happens and see where it takes me. It kind of reminds me a bit of my own journey of, there was no plan to arrive here. It was just like, oh, that's interesting, I'll do some of that. Oh, that person's there, I'll do some of that. And I think that connections and relationships really support that. But also, where you were saying there, that, you know, somebody came into to your office and said, what next? And you could do this. It's that people around you that see what you're capable of before you can see it. And there's something really wonderful of surrounding oneself with people like that.
Yeah, you're so right. The tap on the shoulder, or the reflection, in fact, I see this in you, is so powerful, and has been something that has really helped me in my career at times. Whether it's been them, or whether it's also been myself that's just thought, okay, push yourself. What's that thing you're going to push yourself to do? Has been just so helpful for me. And I think, yeah, those people who want to be cheerleaders for you, want to help you, want to support you, and you can do the same for them, of course. It's not a one-sided relationship. But yeah, having those people around you makes a huge difference.
And as I sort of think about the people around you and those relationships, it sort of reminds me, or makes me think about the BAME Executive Coaching Directory that you've created. And I just want to sort of explore what sat behind the creation of that?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think it's either last year or the year before, actually, someone found me on LinkedIn and he said he was part of a coaching organization. And he said that he was on the board and that they'd said they can't find any coaches from Black, Asian, minority backgrounds. And he said, well, I'm Googling and I'm looking on LinkedIn and I found you. Can you come in and talk to us? He said. And I said, okay. I came in and spoke to them. And they said, we just can't find anyone. And I thought, really? I said, well, I can find you some people. And I just put a note out to my network. I immediately had 10 people, really great coaches who they could put into their coaching pool. They interviewed them and I think they found two that they wanted. And we kept a relationship. But they said, you know, exactly what I sort of put as my mission for the coaching directory. They said they find women with blonde bobs. Those are the women who they mostly see as the coaches. They're the ones who come to them. And they probably have a very traditional route into coaching as well. Maybe they've been counselors or maybe they've had a corporate career and they've become coaches. And I think sometimes people from Black, Asian and minority backgrounds don't have that same, the career journey that looks familiar or the qualification that looks familiar or and we're sometimes disregarded. And just the fact that she said to me, I can't find any. And I thought I found them immediately made me really concerned. But also the fact that I am on the, I'm in the pool of some corporate organizations as their coach. And if they do have events sometimes where they bring the coaches together so we can understand the business more fully, I'm the only one. It's me. I look around. There's some women, lots of women. So we've got the gender, not enough men maybe actually, but not, you know, in terms of visible difference, I don't see it. And I thought, I'm sure I'm not the most qualified or the best coach in the world. I think I do a good job, but there'll be other people who are amazing. Why are they not in these rooms with me? And I'm not in many of the rooms. So there are lots of rooms where there's not even me in them. And so I thought, let me bring something together that really celebrates and showcases the diversity out there. That was my first initial thought around it. But then there's also something else which is really important. And that has come out through Black Lives Matter, that we as a community of Black people are not in the spaces we should be. We're not in the most senior rooms in organizations. We're not on the boards a lot of the time. There's, I think something came out just a couple of weeks ago, The Color of Power. And it said that there are 1,099 most senior roles in the UK. 4.7% of them are filled by people from a visible minority. Now, the UK population is 13% Black, Asian, minority, ethnic. So if there's only 4.7%, that's way low, way too low. And that index was done in 2017, and it's only risen by 1.2%. So in the last 3 years, it's gone up to 4.7%. How long will it take to get up to the 13% of the population that we need it to be? You know, could be forever, at least maybe another 20 years. That's not good enough. So I see something for us as coaches to be in those rooms, to be coaching the leaders of the organizations in the UK, and not to be saying, oh, you should be thinking about that, because that's not what coaches do. But by our very presence in the room, and the questions that we ask and the perspective that we help people have, that we can be making a difference. And if anything, if nothing else to show, actually, look at us. You know, you've got me here. I'm supporting you. Why then are more people in your organization like me at this level supporting you? So I just think there's so much that we can bring, if not also creativity as well, through the way that we engage.
Yeah, I so remember being at events, sort of coaching organizational led events, and looking around and going, where is everybody? There's the same one or two people that I saw last year here, maybe one or two more. And for a while, I kind of thought, maybe there's somewhere else that they're showing up that isn't this space. But I've had this conversation more and more times, I've realized But it's not that there is somewhere else. It's just they're just not showing up. And I think that's partly because they don't feel that those spaces are for them or represents them or their point of view.
Absolutely. You're spot on there. You know, you walk into a room and if everyone looks at you or you feel that everyone's questioning your credentials or your credibility to be there, that's not a welcoming position. Now, of course, there are some environments that you experience that, but it's worth pushing through. Mm. So you'll bother. You'll keep turning up until they really see you. But actually, do you need to keep showing up to a coaching association event? What's necessarily in it for you? Is it worth putting yourself through that? And what do you gain? And I think that coaches from Black, Asian and minority backgrounds have shown up and weighed that up and thought, well, if I don't feel necessarily that welcome, why put myself through this? I think there's a lot to be done, and a lot with coaches, a lot of work to be done with coaches to really help them recognize their own unconscious bias, to help them recognize how they may be making other people feel and what are they bringing into their coaching. This is a real concern, and I've experienced it when I have coached sometimes leaders from Black, Asian and minority backgrounds, and they'll say there are no AIM coaches in our pool. I've had a coach and I tried to explain something and they didn't quite get it. They didn't quite get the nuance of what I was trying to explain to them because actually maybe they weren't even open to hearing it. Mm. And I've got an example from my own experience. When I first went into coaching, I had an opportunity. Actually, in education, they did want some more Black, Asian and minority coaches. And I got this opportunity and I brought it to a coach. He was a white man at the time. And I wanted just to talk it through. And he almost dismissed it as if I was saying something negative. The fact that I was just bringing race into the conversation was like, I'm bringing something negative and we're being solution focused. We're being positive. So we're not going to talk about that. And it was really important for me to talk about. And it wasn't a negative thing. I just wanted to unpack something to really get how I was feeling about it and my thoughts around it. And it was just interesting as a coach, what was being privileged and what wasn't. And how often does that happen?
Yeah, I think part of that sort of response or reaction also comes from this kind of shame that people feel. So one of my sort of quests around this work is to go, this isn't about shaming somebody. It isn't about going, you don't have minorities on your board, therefore you're doing a bad thing. It's about going, hey, what can we do? How can I support you to find the right people to sit in that space? But when we have that conversation, it can be a difficult conversation and people can feel shame or embarrassed, and that triggers a defensiveness, and all of a sudden they're experiencing it as a difficult conversation, or as if we are being difficult about it, as opposed to we're just trying to have the conversation.
Yeah, you're spot on there. You're absolutely spot on. And something I like to say when I have any of these kinds of conversations is to start by saying we're both good people. We're good people. And we're working with what we know right now. And actually, we will know more tomorrow, but this is where we're at. And I think just putting that out there, we're good people, but also good people make mistakes on all sides. And this is just a conversation. But the problem is, if you immediately are triggered to think, actually, I'm a bad person, or they don't know who I am, I'm not racist, or any of those things, you stop listening.
Yeah.
And as soon as you stop listening, then you know that everything's broken down. Nothing can improve without us listening and hearing, really hearing each other. And so it's in a way, it's about actually let me let go of who I believe I am and how great I believe I am as a person, and and actually just hear, just listen, and see if there's something I can learn in this conversation.
You know, often I'll have conversations with Nick Bolton, the founder and CEO of Animus, and we'll be talking about the idea that we're all human beings having a human experience, trying to do the best we can, and how can we come together in that human experience to explore what's working for you and what's not working for you and discuss that and explore that. And it's kind of what you're saying really reminds me of those conversations of two humans coming together to explore their humanness.
Yes. Yeah. But I think the coaching conversation is the one of the safest spaces that you can ever have. And I think it's an opportunity for white men, you know, CEOs, to have conversations with coaches from Black, Asian and minority backgrounds that they maybe have been fearful to have. Maybe they don't want to get it wrong in the workplace, and actually just have that conversation. It's the safest space. There will be no judgment. And I think a coach is really equipped to ask those questions that will really help that person think. So I think it's an opportunity in diversity and inclusion, actually, a real opportunity to move away from we're going to just do initiativitis without doing some work on ourselves. And I think CEOs who really get it will have the power to really make change happen in their organizations.
And that thing of initiativitis, that you know, let's throw another project at it, let's try another thing, but no real long-term plan or desire to create change. I remember when sort of Black Lives Matter sort of came to the fore in the last couple of months, and people were talking a lot about it. There were a lot of organizations putting stuff out there about what they were going to do and how they were changing and what it meant for us. And at Animus, we took a little bit of time to think about what are we really going to do and how are we going to sustain the doing of that so we can actually create a difference. And I think there's something really important of not just having a conversation or throwing an initiative at something, but going, how do we build this into our strategy as an organization so that it has the time to create change, as opposed to, you know, if it hasn't changed overnight, then let's move on to something else.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I personally only want to work with organizations who are thinking long term and really want to consider this at all levels. I think there's such an appetite now. So I don't think that anyone's knocking at a closed door. I think there's a real appetite for people to really want to try and understand, to really want to make a difference, to really make change happen. And I think people are looking for quick and easy answers, and there isn't one. You know, that's the challenge. But I think powerful conversations can change the world. You know, I really do. And I think that's why coaches are in a really great space to be able to help.
Yeah, I sort of, you know, as I think about it, I sort of recognize that as coaches, we ask these powerful questions, and those powerful questions have a ripple. Mm-hmm. They feed into the coachee's thinking, and they ask themselves those questions again, but they also take those questions to their teams, to their boards, to their organization. And those questions kind of live on and ripple into the space. It's one of the things I love about coaching, how there is this constant ripple effect that's happening. We're never just coaching that individual that we're having the conversation with. It kind of seeps into their wider world. And I, you know, that's something that I get a real buzz about with the sort of the coaching space.
Yeah, it's funny. I was coaching this morning, and exactly what my client said, I'm taking those words into my conversation. And once they're in that conversation, they'll go on beyond. And that is pretty amazing, actually, in terms of the impact we have.
So we've spoken a little bit about the coaching directory, and we've spoken a little bit about the retreats that you run. I also want to talk a little bit about your sort of journey to arriving in this space, and sort of, you know, how did you go about from that kind of, I don't know if it was from childhood, from, you know, college, how did you sort of get that energy or that impetus to kind of propel yourself forward?
Yeah, it's a really difficult question. Not sure I know the answer. I had quite humble beginnings. The single parent mum. But my mum was a great role model, actually. So when I was a teenager, she went to college and university and did a degree and became a teacher. And I remember at the time actually saying to her, "Oh, you've done a degree. If I get a degree and my little brother gets a degree, we'll be the three degrees." for anyone who's old enough to remember them as a band, a music group. So I that was, she was an inspiration to me, actually. The fact that she went back to university, that she got her degree. And I think a lot of the time when we see our parents, we think, well, if they can do it, then I can do it. So that role modeling was really, really great for me. I did my A-levels, went into the world of work and had various roles, but then decided to go to university in the evenings. So 3 evenings a week, I think for 5 years I did, to get my business degree while working full time. And I think there was something for me about wanting to earn money, because money was short when I was growing up. So I think I've always understood the value of money and that you need to work hard for money. But I've always been interested in learning as well. And I think I will never stop being interested in learning and reading. And my husband, it's like, another book, stop buying books. There's no space in this house for more books. So, you know, that's the, for me, learning is it keeps me alive. I love it. So I think I'm a disciplined person, I guess, is what I'm saying there. I was only in my 20s to go to work full time, then go to university 3 evenings a week. I think I was quite focused and disciplined in my life. I'm not disciplined in the way that, like I always do the same thing and it's complete routine in my life, but actually if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. I think that's if I promise myself I'm doing something, I've committed to it. And so there are many times in my life where I've probably done more than other people would do. So that evening, studying the evening and working full time. Later on, I decided to buy a flat when I was quite young, and I took a Sunday job as well as working full time so I could save my money to be able to do it. So I think in my early years, I kind of had this focus and discipline to get the things that I wanted. And then went into full-time, my employment took off after my degree, got some different roles, which I really enjoyed, actually. Working for Hamptons International, the biggest state agency, first of all, on their marketing, and then going to work for a leading business school doing their marketing. So I've had some great roles in marketing, and I did love marketing, in fact. But then I found coaching, or coaching found me. And there was something about coaching, the process of me learning about myself. Yeah, the process of going through the coaching program sort of stripped the layers of who I thought I was away and made me think about what was important. And possibly because of my upbringing, sort of getting a stable job, earning money, and security were probably my building blocks for moving forward. But after going through the coaching program, I thought the power of having transformational conversations was more important than actually almost anything else. The power to help someone realize their potential, to see themselves in a different light. Wow, that sort of blew my mind. Mm. And it also made me think about all of the decisions I was making and why I was making. Was I making them for me? Was I making them because that's just what people do? You know, who was I making my decisions for? So the coaching program shook me up and shook up my thinking in many different ways, and actually gave me that mission in life that I just needed to be doing that. That's what I needed to be doing. And I felt stuck, you know, at the time. After I'd completed my coaching program and I was in my job marketing, I did feel like I need to get out of this. I'm not in the right place doing the right thing anymore. And this is horrible for me. And I went down to 4 days in my full-time job. And on the 5th day, I just started sharing my vision with everyone. I just started saying, I want to coach. I love coaching. Coaching is amazing. Probably I was a little bit evangelical. Probably I would meet someone on the train and say, how are you? And then say, yeah, but how are you really? And do you want to talk about this? You know, so I probably was that really annoying person at the beginning who just wanted to coach everyone and thought coaching could cure all panaceas, you know, panacea for all ailments, and then calm down a bit. But actually that was good for me. And an old boss said that to me, share your vision and people and the universe will conspire to make it happen. And that's what I did. I did a lot of sharing, and an opportunity came, which meant I could step into coaching. And that was just amazing for me. And I haven't looked back since. But I think as a coach, you continually evolve. The coach I was 15 years ago is not the coach I am now. I've learned so much. I've done further studying and qualifications. As I said, I've written a book. I've been exposed to lots of different things. And I think you're always evolving as a coach. And my business has evolved to be, as you said, something quite big, maybe amorphous, as a result of where my interest and my knowledge and experience has taken me.
You know, I so hear that how the coaching journey itself, when you learn to become a coach, that the transformation that it has on you, you know, as a coaching school, often people, or I notice people coming in going, right, I'm going to learn this to work with somebody else and do that for them. And then seeing them kind of go through that process of questioning the self and going, well, what does this mean to me? And I thought it meant this, but now I start to explore who I am as a human being. I'm recognizing that it means something different, or I start to recognize the other influences upon me that I wasn't noticing before. And now I can notice that that's them. That's not me. So I can begin to create change and do things the way that I want to do it. And I so remember being that evangelical coach when I started, just kind of trying to coach everybody all the time. And I think you go through that phase because when you have good coaching, it really shifts how you think, and you just kind of go, everybody should have this, so you try and get it out there. And then over time you recognize that, okay, I'll just coach the clients, the people that want me to work with them, as opposed to the people at the bus stop. But I also think that, as you're saying, that it creates great kind of self-reflection, and that self-reflection I think stays with us as coaches. We constantly self-reflect, explore, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What else could we do? And what does this mean for us? Which then allows us to kind of grow and shift and change as your business has. And as I'm saying that, I sort of go, what's next for Jenny? Where what's the next step or the next evolution of Jenny?
Yeah, I don't know what's next for me. I'm looking out for something that I might want to write another book about. My challenge is, actually, I probably have so many ideas and I want to have just one. I just want that one thing that I must write about, because that's what I had of the first one. So I'm waiting for that. So maybe another book. Definitely looking out for some board roles right now. I'm going about to become an empty nester. My daughter's going off to university. So just maybe just some me time as well, actually. Some nice time with me and my husband and just enjoying life.
Jenny, it's been an absolute pleasure having this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
No problem. I've really enjoyed it, Robert. Thanks for the opportunity.
And if people want to get hold of you and they want to find you, where should they go?
Yeah, so my website's just jennygarrett.global, and Garrett's double R and double T.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to watch these episodes as well as listen, you can find the video interviews on our YouTube channel and website now. Thanks for tuning in to Coaching Uncaged. Join us again for more captivating conversations, exploring the art of coaching.